lift life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Time is just about 9 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland here on your 90.7 FM dial. Coming next is Veteran's Voice.
I got a letter from LBJ. It said, this is your lucky day. It's time to put your khaki trousers on. Though it may seem very clear, we've got no job to give you here, so we are sending you to Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation. I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. I jumped off the old troop ship and sank in mud up to my hips. I cussed until the captain called me down. Never mind how hard it's raining, think of all the ground we're gaining. Just don't take one step outside of town. Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation. I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. Every night the local gentry slip out past the sleeping sentry. They go out to join the old VC. In their nightly little dramas, they put on their black pajamas and come lobbing mortar shells at me. But Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation. I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. We'd go around in helicopters like a bunch of big grasshoppers searching for the Viet Cong in vain. They left the note that they had gone, they had to get down to Saigon, their government positions to maintain. And Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation, I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. Well, here I sit in this rice paddy, wondering about Big Daddy, and I know that Lyndon loves me so. Yet how sadly I remember way back yonder in November when he said I'd never have to go. But Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation, I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese.
Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in Hood River, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.com. KBOO.FM, and you can hear our earlier shows on KBOO.FM/Veterans Voice. I'm Marvin, and Tammy's engineering for us today. Sonia couldn't make it, so we want to thank Tammy for engineering for us today. I've got a lot to start before. I read this little article about the young man who was down in front of the federal building, was holding his radio above his head, and the Fed shot him in the head with some projectile that they don't know what it was, and he's been in and out of the hospital. And I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, but I just read that he's back in the hospital, and he's having some problems of leakage within his brain cavity. So I really wish him the best of luck and hope that that can be taken care of. And he was just standing there. He wasn't doing anything. Just had his big radio above his head when they shot him. So I wish him the best of luck. I've gotten a lot of phone calls lately. Not only phone calls, but emails and text messages about what that man boy Donald Trump said about our soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen who've been killed in wars for this country. And he was in Europe, I think in France, and it was at a graveyard for the Marines who had died at Belleau Woods for in World War One, and he couldn't understand why they would be, you know, have done that. You know, he called them losers and suckers, and he says that about all veterans. He has no respect for veterans. You know, he got 5 deferments. 4 of them were for school, which I have no problem with. You know, I really don't have a problem with that. But he got that 5th deferment, which is called a minimal medical deferment for heel spurs, which almost all of the draft boards back in that day didn't accept, because all they would do is take him in, clip him off, and give him a job where he really wouldn't have to do anything. But he got some doctor to write it up, and he got these deferments. He even told his son, I can't remember which one, if he goes into military, he was going to disown him. So he has no respect, you know, no respect. You know, I didn't support the Vietnam War, but I went, and my buddies were there. You know, more men served in Vietnam as enlistees than for draftees. And the only reason they really got into the draft real heavy was because they needed more bodies in Vietnam, and enlistments weren't going up because guys are coming back from Vietnam and saying, it's not worth it, don't go. It's not really our fight. And so they really started having to really raise the draft and get more guys in. And like the song said, you know, President Johnson, which I got a letter from him, just like that guy did, and started drafting just really, really heavy around 67, 68, 69, when the fighting was really starting to really intensify. In 66, it was pretty heavy. 67, 68 was the highest body loss. Over 58,000 Americans died. I can't imagine how many Vietnamese died at that time. But he really has no respect for veterans, you know. And people aren't very happy about that. I've been down to the federal building and to some place, and I have this sign I hold. I haven't been down there since the fires because, you know, I can't breathe in it. Even up here where I live, up in the mountains, man, the smoke was just really heavy, and the the sky was like this really orange color. So I really didn't go out and about very much when that was happening. Right now it's not too bad. I can look out the window and see the smoke. And as you go down the hill, it gets a little thicker. But it was really thick. Last night there was a lot of thunderstorms and lightning and a lot of rain. So the rain was great, but the lightning, that wasn't, you know, I don't want to start another fire. But like I was saying, I'd go down to the federal building and I'd stand with my sign. I'd wear my Vietnam veteran hat and I had a sign that says Trump, Vietnam War casualties are not losers or suckers. And it had 58,000 killed. I had to kill in red, then wounded 153,000 in red, and then MIAs I had 1,000 something. I can't remember exactly how many, but I still have two friends that are MIAs from Vietnam in 1968. But I had that, and I would stand out there, and the people would just kind of look at it, and some I got thumbs up, you know, and some I got the other finger up. So most of them was pretty nice about it, but you know, he has no respect for anybody really, and especially for veterans. He thinks we're all stupid, and we know who the stupid one is, but but that's one thing that I was really getting was how many times he had called us stupid and things, you know. I was downtown when that so-called caravan came from Clackamas County over to Portland, and I was downtown with my sign and everything, and you know, watching what was going on. And they came into town. Those guys, those people, came into town. They were really looking for trouble. You know, what I heard, that they weren't really supposed to come into town, but, you know, they did anyway. And the police did nothing about it. They just let them come, and they came in. They were armed. There was just no doubt about it. They were armed. They had, they also used bear spray and pepper spray on people, and they would get out of their trucks and get in fights with people, That happened all the whole time that they were there, and I was, you know, watching, and I'd show my sign to them, and they didn't bother me. They just went right on by. But if they really, really respected what was going on, they wouldn't support Trump, you know, the guy who refused to go to Vietnam when he had his chance and now sends others to die. And they still support him. I can't understand that. I talk to these people, and you know, they agree with what, you know, things I'm saying and everything, but they still support Trump. And I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. Why they would support this guy. So, but in that night, I had left before the shootings. Which killed, I think his name is Danielson from Patriot Prayer. I had left right before that because my pickup was parked in that parking lot, not a lot, but the parking garage that before the shooting happened. So I'd left by then. But the guy that got shot, I had seen him all day the time I was down there, and he was carrying a gun on his hip. And he was spraying people with bear spray and just getting in, you know, getting in people's faces and everything. And so he wasn't just an innocent bystander. And I watched the video of the shooting, and I noticed that the bear spray was sprayed, and then I heard the two shots and the guy went down. But It was terrible that he got killed. I think that's just terrible. And I watched the guy that was with him, you know. What did they expect? You know, he was crying and screaming at people and everything when his buddy was on the ground dying. He didn't want to let the street medic help the guy on the ground, you know. Finally, he did, and the medic was helping the guy on the ground. Then the cops showed up and shoved everybody out of the way and ended up by kicking her first aid bag out of the way. So, you know, that's what the police think. And the police knew they were coming. The police stepped aside and let them come into the city. And there was people with warrants out for their arrest, and they didn't do anything about it. There's one guy, I can't remember his name, was in front of, I think, was the courthouse. I'm not sure. But I remember he pulled out a gun and was pointing it at people, and they didn't do anything about it. And a really interesting point that when I was standing there with my sign, and there were these veterans, you know, had Veterans for Trump, and they had on their they had these shields and stuff, you know. And I was talking to them and told them, you know, all this stuff about it and about him not doing this and all that and everything, and they still supported this guy. I don't get it. I just don't get it why they would support him. And especially after what he said about, you know, people who died in the wars, and they got sent into a war because of him, and he didn't do anything about it when he got sent. I mean, when he was supposed to get sent, he didn't go. And these kids, they were kids. They weren't very old. They were kids to me. And I remember looking at their faces and saying, geez, these guys look just like we did when we went to Vietnam, you know, because we went over there as young kids and we came back as old men. And I just thought, oh, these poor guys, I hope they're getting counseling from the VA. But that whole day was just a mess. And the police knew exactly what was going on, and they did nothing to stop it. And then the guy, Rhino, I think his name is, I have trouble pronouncing his last name. The man who shot Daniels, I think his name is Danielson, from Portland, from Patriot Prayer. So, and then I guess after the shootings happened, he took off, and they put a warrant out for his arrest, a murder, I think it was a murder. And before they found him up in Lacey, Washington, he had done a interview with a TV series, and he talked about what he had done, you know, why he thought, you know, that he said it was in self-defense and all of this, and that it was Vice, interview with Vice, conducted by freelance journalist Donovan Farley, and Reinhold was saying that he was pulling security for the Antifa. He's a committed Antifa supporter. He was with them, and he was pulling, like I said, security. He said he was in the Army and had been in the Army, but the military had been asked if he had been in the military, and they couldn't find him in their files, which doesn't mean he didn't serve. It's just that they just couldn't find the papers. And Farr reported that Reinhold said he went downtown Saturday night to provide security for racial justice protesters who felt threatened by a caravan of Trump supporters who paraded through the city center. Reinhold said he and a friend ended up in a standoff with a man who he said had a knife. Had I stepped forward, he would have maced or stabbed me, he told Vice. I was confident that I did not hit anyone innocent, and I made my exit. Reinhold told Weiss he considered the shooting an act of self-defense. You know, lots of lawyers suggested I shouldn't even be saying anything, but I feel it's important that the world at least gets a little bit of what really going on, he said. I had no choice. I mean, I had a choice. I could have sat there and watched them kill a friend of mine of color, but I wasn't going to do that, he said. Okay.
We do have a caller on the line.
Danielson. Mm-hmm. Danielson's the guy's name. Danielson. Earlier Thursday, a spokesman for the Multnomah County District Attorney said that the office had no comment and that the investigation remained ongoing. Reinhold's sister told OPB that Portland police asked her to identify a man in photos from protests after Saturday's shooting. She told them it was her estranged brother. The sister spoke on the condition that she not be named because she said her family had received death threats. And that makes sense. Portland police asked me to confirm from the picture that included in those threatening messages if it was indeed my brother. I said I haven't seen him in 3 years, but it looks like him. The tattoo is new, but it looks like it could be him. Photographs of social media show a man appearing to be Reinhold with a fist tattooed on his neck. In the photo, the tattoo looks similar to the symbol associated with the Black Lives Matter movement. Reinhold, who is white, has ties to the area with address in Portland, Clackamas, and Sandy, Oregon. His sister described her brother as erratic and self-destructive. I do know he had a temper, and I do know he acts very badly to being provoked. So he took off and he ended up in Lacey, Washington. That's where my brother-in-law lives, up in Lacey. And he gave that interview with Vice, and I don't know. He really did believe that he was firing in self-defense. He really felt that. If you look at the video, from what you can see, it looks like he was maced. And the guy did have a loaded weapon. And when he reached down to get the bear spray, the guy may have thought that he was going for his pistol. So, you know, we won't know now. And so they found him up in Lacey. And when he was coming out of the apartment is when the troubles really started. There's two people. The government says that he had a gun in his hand, and there's two people who were up there. A man who said that he didn't see a gun, he saw a phone, and that the cops got out of their cars and started shooting. And he stands by that. He swears that's what he saw. And, you know, when a shooting happens, you know, there's all kinds of things that people, you know, it's just crazy. Oh, yeah, the guy who was killed had a loaded Glock pistol. And they can fire a lot of rounds. And, and so another person who saw it out her window, is a girl who saw it out her window, said basically the same thing, that she didn't see a gun. She saw they had a phone in his hand, and that when they came out, the cops came out of their vehicle and they started shooting. So that's two witnesses who said that, you know, they just showed up and started shooting. And the young girl who reported that, she was getting death threats a lot, they said, and that she was afraid to come out of her her apartment, and that I think it was that afternoon or evening that a right-wing motorcycle gang showed up and was driving around her apartment building and parked right down the block from her house, and she really felt threatened by that, and she refused to go outside. So when something like that happens, you know, we'll never know exactly what happened. Both the people are dead. And I don't know what the guy that was with the Patriot Prayer guy, what he told the cops that happened. But, man, something was going to happen because the tension was so high. And there were so many fights going on. And it was a mess. And something was definitely going to happen. And it did, and two people paid with their lives. But I don't know what the cops expected, you know. They're in cahoots with, they've talked to the Patriot Prayer all the time. They had people that they knew that had arrest warrants that they didn't arrest when they could have went in and arrested them. You know, they didn't do that. They said, well, if we go in and we arrested them, it would just cause so much trouble and all of this. But if it was somebody from the left, they would have went right in and arrested them. They would have walked right through that crowd swinging their batons and arrested the guy. But they didn't do that with the right winger. You know, they just let those guys go, even though they knew they had arrest warrants. And Trump and Attorney General, so-called Attorney General Barr, you know, they were praising the cops for shooting the guy and all this. And it just you know, you just can't take a stick and beat a beehive without something happening. And it was just bound to happen. It was just bound to happen. And then the young kid up in, I think, Wisconsin, a 17-year-old kid with a semi-automatic rifle kills two people and wounds another person so bad that he loses his arm. You know, the kid wasn't old enough to own that rifle legally. And so here they are marching like they're part of the police force, and the cops are talking to, this is in Wisconsin, the cops are talking to them, giving them water and all this, you know, buddy, and up to them. And this guy shot these people, killed them, and wounded that guy. And then he walked right up to the police with his hands up, and the cops just went right on by him, and so he got in his car and went home. A 17-year-old kid, you know, that's just a horrible thing. Just a horrible thing to even think about, that they that kid was able to get a rifle that fires rounds as fast as you can pull that trigger and get it. And I saw pictures of this kid. He looked like a little kid. And he's walking with these so-called militias, you know, they got all these arms and weapons and all this stuff on them like they're in the military. They're marching around like they belong there. What they expect is something's going to happen. You just don't do that. And the cops just let them get away with it. And, you know, when you think about that, you know, whose side are they on, you know? And they're definitely not on, you know, like Pete Seeger sings his songs, which side are you on? You know, obviously they're not on the side of the citizens when they allow these guys, so-called militias, to carry armed weapons and act like police or act like the military. You know, they're not really militias, because militias are controlled by the state. The state controls the state of militias, and these people are not part of the state militias. These are vigilantes. There's just no doubt about it. They're just vigilantes. And that young kid, why didn't some of those older guys, you know, step in to tell this kid, yeah, you're too young, you know, you need to not be here with that rifle. You need to be, you know, home. But they didn't. They didn't do it. You know, they're just as responsible for those people getting killed and that guy losing his arm as those militia vigilantes. You know, if they would have been adult about it, they would have, you know, not allowed that kid to be there. So, but Tammy,
yep.
Can you go ahead and play that second song for me?
Sure thing.
Thank you. I'll talk to you about the song after Tammy plays it.
We'd like to thank you, Richard Nixon. Thank you for the job you've done. Revolution is the people's. Thank you, and the thank yous have just begun. Thank you, Hank Kissinger. Thank you for the job you've done. Revolution is the people's. Thank yous and the thank yous have just begun. Well, you know, you took the power from the people.
Yeah, that song is really interesting. It comes off an album of the
to the wars.
always the young to fall.
We are back on the air.
Okay. Hello?
We are back on the air, and you are live here in KBOO Portland.
Oh. I'm on the air now?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. This is the Veterans Voice, right?
Yes, it is. Hold on one moment, please.
Okay.
For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men, and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with a saber and a gun. Tell me, is it worth it all?
And you are back to Veterans Voice. Take it away, Marvin.
Oh, great. Sorry, we got doing live radio away from the station is kind of hard. But I was saying that the Covered Wagon musicians who did that album were all active duty military. They were all in Mountain Home Air Force Base in Idaho that wrote that song, did the song, and Napalm Sticks to Kids and others on that album. And they talked about the GI movement at that time. And the GI movement was really growing strong within the military at that time because of the war in Vietnam. And even in Vietnam, you know, guys were refusing to go on patrols and all of the, you know, a lot of this. The Black Power movement was very strong in Vietnam. And I played years ago, I played Napalm Sticks to Kids just to show what war really is like on civilians. You know, most people who die in a war are civilians. And we got a phone call from some lady that was really angry at us for playing that song. And we thought it was that we had to play that song, that we had to show what a war is really like. And you know, we didn't feel bad about playing that song. So, you know, I don't feel bad about that song. You know, played if I have to do it, we'll play it again, because war is not a game. You know, war is deadly. And anybody who's ever been to a war, well, you never forget it. You'll remember it to the day you die, because it's something that most people don't go through. And so, you know, it stays with you the rest of your life. I was looking through, I followed what was going on at Fort Hood, Texas. I think as in this year, so far this year, there's been like 28 deaths in Fort Hood, Texas. Some have been suicides, some have been murders, a lot of sexual harassment and rapes in Fort Hood. And I followed this, the one that really got me was from a young woman, and she was an armor, worked on, you know, took care of the rifles and stuff. And she had been sexually harassed, and she didn't go to her chain of command because the guy that was doing it was in that chain of command. But she had told her friends and she had told her family about being sexually harassed by this guy, and she disappeared. And they finally found her body. She had been murdered and buried, and that the guy who supposedly did it had taken off and he committed suicide. But he had gotten another woman to help him bury the girl, the young woman. And that's just one of the many, many murders and stuff that has been going on at Fort Hood. the commanding officer got general, he was a general, he got relieved of his duty, and that's why I would never ever would have let my daughter go into the military. There's just no way. You know, when I was in the military, I was only in Vietnam, you know, and training here, so we weren't around a lot of female soldiers. But now it's just the military, you know, has just opened up to women, so they can have just about any job in the military. They fly helicopters, they fly jets, you know. Now they're in the infantry, and they've gone through Ranger school and all of this. But they're, you know, there's still that price to pay. You know, it's a good old boys club, still is, when these women have to go through all that harassment. But, you know, and 28 people have died at Fort Hood. That's really sad. But it's not just Fort Hood. It's, you know, it's other huge like Fort Bliss and all of those, that the similar things are going on. And that this woman, Gilliam, I think it's her last name, Gilliam. I think she was a specialist fourth class that was murdered by someone in her chain of command. And her family is, you know, just very, very angry and want to really get to the bottom of it. And they thought they had it all, you know, done. And then some other soldiers came up and said that they saw her at the time. And out by, I think they said she was out by her car smoking a cigarette or something. And so that just blew the whole thing up again. But the guy killed himself, and he had a woman help him bury her. So that pretty much says, you know, who did it. But why should women have to go through all that in the military? You know, why do they go through the harassment in the military by the chain of command? Why they women don't feel safe, you know, reporting harassment in the military? You know, the commanding officer of the company, I think, has the last word on what happens. I'm not sure, because, like I said, it's been so long. But why do these women have to go through that? You know, they don't get the respect that they deserve. They have that pressure on them from the men in these units. Not all men, but some. You know, I think at Fort Hood, there was a sergeant in one of these classes that teach soldiers, you know, to respect women, who was running a prostitution ring out of Fort Bliss. You know, I can't imagine a woman going into the military. Just no way I would imagine a woman going into the military. It's just not right that these women have to go through all that. You know, I was talking about covered wagon musicians that did that song I was just talking about, and Napalm Sticks to Kids, and they were singing about the GI movement, and I was talking a little bit about it, how the black movement was very strong in Vietnam, and the GI movement, not only in Vietnam but also in the States, was very, very strong. And it all starts because they sent us to Vietnam. You know, a war that had no reason for us to be there. Even Robert McNamara, who was the in charge of the military, you know, Secretary of Defense, he even said early on that we couldn't win that war. We couldn't win the war. But they still sent more and more guys to die, and more men to be missing in action. The whole military almost imploded. You know, people were getting out, refusing, you know, a lot of people went AWOL, you know, just left their units. Some people went to Canada, some people went to Mexico, you know, to get away from the draft. You know, just because this is an all-volunteer military doesn't mean they can be used and abused. You know, they really can't be that. To the government, and Trump specifically thinks that the military is nothing but his tool, that he can do whatever he wants with that tool. And if that's sending him into harm's way, so be it. You know, he doesn't care. He really doesn't care. So I just can't, you know, I think of all the damage this guy's done to this country. He's got everybody divided, you know. We're having battles in the streets, people shooting each other, and this guy just keeps on poking that beehive, you know, with the stick, keeps poking it. He just keeps it going like that. That's how he did his businesses, you know. Most of his businesses ended up bankrupt, and the people he owed money to got pennies on the dollars, and here he is sitting in the people's house doing the same thing, you know. I listen to the news every day to see, you know, who's been killed, where our military is. And, you know, a lot of now, not so many being killed by combat, but there's a lot of accidents in the military. A couple young troops were killed when they're not Jeeps anymore, Bradley fighting machines or something, whatever it is, wrecked, and they were killed. So there's still people being killed. We got troops all over this world, all over the world, and they talk, and here in the States, you know, you keep hearing these right wing pundits and senators and Congress people and all this always talking about send the National Guard in, straighten up the streets, send the National Guard in, you know. And then I think about my buddy Joe Lewis that was wounded at Kent State by the National Guard. So you know, if they send those guys in, there's going to be, you know, all bets are off. It's going to be a problem. And we just can't put up with this anymore. We just can't. And we have to think of a way to get out of it, because if it gets any worse, it's going to really be a problem. It's already a problem, but it's going to be a worse problem. And Tammy, did you say that someone called in and had a question?
Yeah, they had, amongst some of the questions, they wanted to exclaim that they don't think that there should be a draft for anyone under the age of 21, if you have any thoughts about mm-hmm. that, saying that, you know, 18-year-olds are pretty much kids, and that way it's easier, and then it goes to the other part of it's easier to manipulate them at a younger age, and the caller believes that the people who enlist are being duped because of this, if you have any opinions.
Right.
Did explain that during World War II, it was more of a world threat. There's more threat than there is now, and now the caller suggests that people who do enlist are being duped or are going in for personal reasons, like the benefits that you get once you are dismissed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because the average age in World War II, you know, was higher because they were drafting a lot more people into it, and the draft age was a lot higher, and it's a lot harder to boss people around who are older, more mature, where you get these kids in there at 18, 19, 20 years old. It's pretty easy to mold them into what you want. And that's why I remember talking to some, we called them lifers, guys that, you know, they were going to do their 20 years in there, and we were, this was in Vietnam, and we were saying about, you know, why are they drafting, you know, we're so young, you know, we're 18, 19 years old, and we're over here, you know, fighting this war and dying and being wounded and everything, and why don't you draft older guys? And they say, well, this was a sergeant, this guy is sergeant, and he says, well, we can't get them to do what you guys are doing. And I thought, boy, that's the truth. That is the truth. You know, we would sit around at night and we would talk about stuff, you know, about what was going on at our families and how many days we had left. You know, it was a one-year tour, and we were talking about, you know, how many days we had left and, you know, razzing the guys that had, you know, more time. But we also talked about the war, and we all talked about, most of the guys were saying that it's just not, you know, it was useless, that we keep going back to the same spots over and over. We would go and take a hill or something and then stay there maybe a day or so, and then we'd go off again and go someplace else. And we'd, my cousin Bill, who was a combat medic for America, he said that he got there in late 69, and he said that they would be going and digging in on hills, and they really didn't have to dig very far because there were still foxholes that had been dug by the guys that was there before them. And so when they started doing body counts to say, you know, how we were winning the war, if we had more body, you know, kills than they had kills, and we were winning the war. So that's kind of a horrible way to count, that the only thing you count for is a body. You know, that's really, really not a way to go about it. I was sitting here in my little office at my, and right on thing, I was looking over and it says wars are poor chisels for carving out peaceful tomorrow. And that's Dr. King. Dr. King said that. You know, I was in Vietnam when Dr. King was murdered, and that was such a hard time. Such a hard time. Not in the field so much, because we all stuck together a lot, but in the rear areas, which really in Vietnam there was no real rear areas, because it was, you know, their country. They knew what was where. But there was a lot of, back in those areas, there was a lot of fights between blacks and whites, and it just, the tension was really, really high because of the dissatisfaction of even being there in the war, and talking about it. When we'd stand down, which means we'd go into some fire base or something, we'd get resupplied. We got hot food and took showers and everything like that. And it was so sad because everybody split. The white guys would go one place, the black brothers would go another place, the Hispanic guys would go another place, and the Asian guys would go another place, you know? But then when we went back to the field, we all stuck back together. But it was in those rear areas where really the troubles, the racial problems were just really horrible, really horrible. I remember going to this one place and got there and start talking to some of the guys who were, you know, stationed there, the intelligence units and Signal Corps and things like that. And some guy came up, he was from some intelligence unit, and he came up and he gave me and some of my friends newspapers, and they were these GI movement anti-war newspapers. And we was talking to him, and we said, well, what's the feeling of you guys, you know? And they said, this is stupid, you know, there's no reason for this war, there's no reason to be here. And they were doing this newspaper and passing it out, and I carried it with me for a long time. And to see these guys, you know, just unhappy with the war and wanting to go home, I can't imagine what it was there like in, say, 69, 70, 71, when the anti-war movement was so strong in the States, that these guys over there, you know, refusing to do things. And I talked to a guy who was there in 69, maybe 70, and he was saying that all the lifers would be out at this fire support base, which was an artillery base, And at night, they'd go back into Saigon, you know, or if they were near Saigon, they'd go back into Saigon, and they wouldn't come out and back out until the very next day. And so the guys were really angry about that. And it was just those guys, lifers, came just to get their ticket punched so they could get, you know, have combat on their record so they could get a higher promotion, get a promotion. They had, you know, one thing I didn't know, that even the 4th Division, they had psychiatrists and psychologists there. And that if guys were having really bad times, they would get sent to talk to these psychiatrists and psychologists about, you know, their feelings about the war and, you know, all, you know, just this whole problem that was going on over there. And most of the time they were sent right back out to the field. They were sent right back out. A lot of guys would go to the chaplain and say, I can't do this anymore. I just, it's just not right. I just can't do it anymore. And they would say, well, you know, you're doing this for God and you're doing it for country and all of this. And so they'd send them right back out, you know. There was a lot of suicides in Vietnam that, you know, that isn't very much talked about. But their suicides are pretty high in Vietnam. And I can't imagine. I was talking to a guy the other day. He called, and he has been in Fallujah and fighting over, you know, in the cities and in Fallujah. And he was really having a hard time about it. And we were talking about it, and, you know, I was listening to what he was saying, and I listened to him, and it was just, he was saying the same things we were saying when we came back from Vietnam. You know, he was having alcohol problems. He had been divorced. He was having trouble getting a job. He had applied for disability through the VA system, and he was having trouble. He was having to wait to, you know, see what they decided, and he was running out of money, and he was just having a really hard time, and he just wanted to see his kids, and his wife was keeping the kids away from him, and he was just having a hard time. And I thought, that's just the same thing we had, you know, the same thing we had coming back. All wars are the same. All wars are the same. You know, guys from World War II, from Korea, you know, from Panama, who fought in Panama, from the continuing Gulf Wars. It's the same thing. It's, you know, what have we got? You know, we've wasted lives. We've wasted lots of money. You know, nothing's been settled. Nothing's been decided. You know, when we went into Iraq, that was just one of the stupidest mistakes I ever heard of. And those guys and men and women came back, and they're having the same problem. They came back, and they're having the same problems. So the GI movement was very strong during the Vietnam War, very strong. But now, you know, there was even a time when there was an American Servicemen's Union that the GI movement wanted to have a union. And boy, the government put a kibosh on that really fast. They'd put out comic books, you know, and show guys laying in hammocks, and the sergeant saying, come on, we got to go out there. They're attacking this. And he says, nah, you know, and the soldier was laying back, nah, you know, this is my day off. Or, you know, just this real propaganda, just horrible stuff, you know. And things like that. We can't stop. We got to continue going. You know, there needs to be, next time those right-wingers come into the city, you know, there needs to be 10,000 people downtown, you know. I know a lot of people are afraid and worried about stuff, but if we don't stand up to them, they're just going to keep getting, you know, thinking it's okay and they can do what they want. We have to make the police responsible for their actions too. You know, I'm sick of reading in the paper where another young black man is killed by the police. It's just getting out, you know, it's just horrible. It's just, we just can't do it anymore. We just have to stand up and say enough's enough, and we're just not going to allow this anymore to happen. Well, I'll be back on October the 16th at 9 a.m. And Tammy, there it is.
To the Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British wars. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I killed my share of engines in 1,000 different fights. I was there at the Little Big Horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with a saber and a gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican land, fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't a marching anymore.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Eco Film Festival from September 24th through October 1st, streaming online. The 2020 Portland Eco Film Festival features 30 films, a youth showcase, and